This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Good afternoon, colleagues, and welcome to the Identification and Safeguarding Trafficked Children workshop. I'd just like to introduce Aarti Kapoor, who is from CEOP and is policy advisor. And I'm Philip Michaud, and I'm Service Manager for Children's Services in Harrow, but also leading on the National Child Trafficking Toolkit on behalf of the London Safeguarding Children Board. So welcome. What we would like to do as part of this session is be as interactive as possible. We have got a short presentation that each of us will do, but we are very keen for some engagement and to hear your views around how you see child trafficking, what some of the barriers are, and what some of the issues you're finding within your own local authority or agency. So, without further ado, I'd like to ask Aarti to kick off the session. I think you need to go up to the podium.
I don't think. Do you want me to?
Yes, you do.
Oh, okay.
Hi, right, so I have 10 minutes to whiz through the background to child trafficking, and so I'll go through it very fast. So I'm from the Child Exploitation and Online Protection Centre. 3 years ago, we didn't know hardly anything. We didn't know anything about child trafficking. We had one report that was from ECPAT who outlined about 20 cases that they'd found in London. And so I came into CEOP to start looking at the problem of child trafficking and to actually scope the scale and nature of it in the UK. And what we wanted to know were, where are these children coming from? What are their backgrounds? What are their vulnerabilities? How are they being brought into the UK? And once they're in the UK, how are they being exploited and how are they being abused? And so what we did was we went to all the police forces in the UK and we went to a number of local authorities and the UK Border Agency and NGOs, and we gathered case data from all of them on child trafficking. And we've continued to do that to this day, and we're going to be continuing to do that. And actually, I'm going to give you some of the highlights of what we've found out about child trafficking in the UK. Before I start, I'd just like to say that if you'd like to get the full information, you can actually download it from our website at ceop.gov.uk, or it's actually ceop.police.uk. So what we found so far is that children who are trafficked to the UK are coming from over 55 different countries around the world. When we scoped the first, when we scoped child trafficking for the first report, we found that it was difficult to find in each case whether there had been per se trafficking. What we therefore did was to look at the cases that we were given by local authorities, police forces, border agency, and NGOs, and actually apply indicators to them. And we found that there were concerns around child trafficking in 330 cases over a 20-month period. In the second strategic threat assessment that we undertook, we found 325 children over a one-year period from 2008 to 2009, where we found there were concerns around child trafficking. And we've actually used these indicators now to help and share these indicators with local authorities to help actually identify children on the ground. And what we've found so far is that when children are brought to the UK, although it's not necessary to find that they've been deceived into exploitation once they come into the UK, that nevertheless they were being controlled. And they were being controlled in a number of ways. They were being controlled in a number of ways which would actually help police forces and local authorities on the ground to identify issues around their abuse. We found that children were being controlled through physical and sexual violence, threats of harm to themselves or their family. Often children would witness violence to other people, and therefore they felt intimidated by that. And we found a lot of emotional manipulation and grooming, not just with sexual exploitation cases, but also with labour exploitation cases, domestic servitude, and so on. Another large common theme that came up, that keeps coming up in a lot of child trafficking cases, is where vulnerable children come into the UK and they find themselves in debt from between £10,000 to £20,000. And they are therefore obliged to pay off that debt. And sometimes the only way they feel they can pay off this debt is to do what the agents tell them to do. And sometimes, for example, with Chinese young children or young girls, they will be told that the only way they could pay off this debt is through prostitution. And so what will happen then is, for a Chinese young person, for example, she will be trafficked internally around the UK for a number of 2 to 3 years and be required to pay off this debt. Drugs and alcohol was used also with sexual exploitation cases. We find that a lot with also Indigenous UK children as well. Again, cultural and ritual practices were abused. Not to say that a lot of cultural practices are all abusive, but they were the actual values and norms were abused within certain cultures. We found that with adult as well as underage girls that were coming in from Nigeria, often they would have undergone a ritual in Nigeria where parts of their body would be cut or hair would be clipped, and then that would be, you know, kept with somebody in the country. And so when they came here, they felt that part of their spirit was kept over there, and they were being controlled by this other entity. And these influences are very strong with children here. We found that other cultural norms were also being exploited. I know that, for example, in Vietnam, if the family takes a loan from somebody else in the community, they have to pay it back. And if they don't, then it affects their standing and their face and their reputation in the community. And therefore, these children often come into the UK with these huge burdens on their shoulders. How are these children being exploited? We found that, in fact, when children are commodified, they're commodified in any way possible. It's probably easier to say how children are not exploited in the UK. We haven't found organ harvesting, and we haven't found children being used as child soldiers, like in some countries in Africa. But we found that, in fact, children were being exploited in domestic servitude, in sexual exploitation, various types of criminal activities, such as in cannabis cultivation, labor exploitation in restaurants, in the building industry, benefit fraud, illegal adoption, and so on. We also found that children don't neatly fit into various, you know, into each of these exploitation type categories. For example, we found cases that have been, you know, given to us by police and local authorities where a child may have been found in domestic servitude but has also been sexually exploited, both abused in the home but also commercially exploited outside. We found that where children are involved in criminal activities like Roma children or Vietnamese children, you know, on the streets or selling DVDs or in cannabis cultivation farms, they may also be exploited in the home to do chores around the house. Often these children are not going to school and they're not registered with doctors and they are hidden from society. We're finding that when the children are brought through into the UK, no matter how they come in, whether through seaports or through airports, once they're in the UK, they are then internally trafficked around the UK. We found this was a significant characteristic because with a lot of local authorities and local and with police forces, those that have ports in their geographic regions are often the ones that are targeted by, let's say, you know, central government to do more on trafficking. And local authorities that are in rural areas often feel, well, actually, this isn't an issue for us. But in fact, our intelligence has shown that once children are brought into the UK, they're often internally trafficked around the UK and in all areas of the UK, and therefore it's an issue for all of us to be aware of. We found not only that children were coming from over 55 different countries across the world, but in fact they were transiting to through many more countries. And often children had already been exploited before they came into the UK. So there was one case, for example, of a recent case that I've been reading about, where a Chinese girl was trafficked first to Africa, and she was kept there in a hotel for a number of months. And while she was in that hotel, she was required to do lots of work while in the hotel, completely unpaid. Another case I remember is of a boy, a Bangladeshi boy that was trafficked when he was 8 years old to the Middle East. And then he worked there as a domestic servant in somebody's home for about 4 or 5 years. And then he was resold to somebody else, who then re-trafficked him to the UK, where he was found working in a restaurant. He was by this age 14 or 15. By this time he was 14 or 15, and he hadn't ever been to school. So these are the types of cases that we're finding and that we're continuing to try and identify across the UK. We use the case data that we get from frontline agencies to compile these key themes and trends, and then we make these available to all child protection professionals and law enforcement. And that's why they're available on our website. At the same time, we found that there are obviously limitations to our understanding of child trafficking. We understand that it's going to take a bit of time to completely understand all the intricacies around various profiles of child trafficking. Domestic servitude, cannabis cultivation, sexual exploitation, they all each have their own intricacies and characteristics. And how to respond to them is different in each case as well. But what we found was that if these cases weren't being shared with us, we found that that meant that local police forces, local authority, children's services, border agency weren't identifying it themselves. And if local authorities weren't identifying cases, that means that safeguarding and child protection responses weren't being put into place. And therefore, since then, we've been using this intelligence and sharing it with our colleagues in local authorities and police forces to try and engage in awareness-raising activities as well as pilot projects to help identify and safeguard children. And that's the first response for us. And then after that, to actually try to identify the offenders and help police forces and support police forces to bring these traffickers to account. And that's where I'm going to pass on to Phil now. I think I've talked for 10 minutes, so... Thank you.
And I think Artie's description of the issues and the complexities involved in child trafficking have been helpful. And I'd like to spend a moment or two just informing you really of the development of the toolkit that has been piloted for the last 18 months, and there were 6 months within its when it was created. And that particular two-year project involved a number of local authorities across the UK, from Glasgow to Kent, Manchester, involved the Welsh Assembly, the Scottish Government, and a range of other agencies and law enforcement within England and Scotland. And I would say, from the local authority perspective and agencies that are coming into contact with children on a regular basis, that was important in guiding this particular process, because local authorities 2 years ago and more were indicating that they suspected there was an issue of child trafficking, and this was pre the Council of Europe Convention Against Human Trafficking. They suspected this was happening in their local authority, but the knowledge, awareness, and tools to address this particular issue were limited. So the toolkit was created by the London Safeguarding Children Board, and in partnership with the Association of Chief Police Officers Trafficking Group, Home Office, local authorities, non-government organisations, etc., and piloted. As we went through the pilot, what we found was critical was the identification process for trafficked victims, because without that mechanism in place, the techniques used by serious organised criminals and individuals that traffic children for, let's say, domestic servitude, where it may be a family or one adult that's trafficking a child internationally, the systems and techniques used by organised crime are effective, because these are children, and they hide trafficked children. So they are not known to most agencies. But without that awareness raising exercise, looking for indicators in all agencies, for instance, where a child would not be registered with the GP, but may present at an A&E or a gum clinic if they're involved in sex exploitation. These agencies being aware, spotting the indicators and referring in to children's services. And as part of the toolkit, one of the systems that we developed was multi-agency. A multi-agency operational, frontline operational, but also a strategic approach where we're sharing intelligence with SOCA, with CEOP and other agencies. But from a children's services perspective, that multi-agency response is critical because the issues involved in child trafficking are complex and difficult to identify. And we have, as we've gone through the pilot, some excellent examples of good practice where this works. Agencies come together. To give you an example, the CPS, the law enforcement, UKBA, detention centres where children may be detained, local authorities, children's services, schools, health, etc., come together and start to share information and share intelligence around that particular child. That informs the children's social care response about safeguarding and then triggers the safeguarding mechanism. But within the context of trafficking, there is an issue, and that issue is time. Because, as I've touched on, the techniques that are used by serious organised criminals do mean that children have been coerced, threatened, physically abused to such an extent where they are, when they are identified and accommodated, they are highly likely to go missing back to that network. And I think the particular point that Artie raised around children, the example where their hair has been cut and that spiritual element is used as a technique, means that these children will flee back to that network. And indeed, we're aware of cases where threats and actual violence to families back in the country of origin happens. So children being children will acquiesce and return. So for local authorities, what we've identified and other agencies have identified as a mechanism to start to address that particular issue is safe and secure accommodation. And this has been the experience as part of the pilot and will form part of the recommendations when the final guidance is available towards August and September of this year. So safe accommodation is critical in the context of safeguarding and the well-being of children. Now, that does throw up some questions around what that safe and secure accommodation package would look like, because our experience of colleagues in Holland or France is that they have a very good outcome where they reduce the risk of children going missing and indeed prevent it, but they do have a secure option where children are in secure accommodation, not in the same context as the UK, but they are locked in at night and during the day and are escorted when they are outside that particular unit. Now, those are some of the options that are under consideration now. How do we prevent children going missing back to exploitation and potentially physical harm? And again, this particular slide just highlights the operational element for agencies coming together to assess the needs of victims. And the toolkit itself, within the toolkit, a whole range of tools are provided to all agencies to assist them, be it local safeguarding children board strategic, for forming their child trafficking subgroups, be it indicator matrices for A&E, for law enforcement, for housing, for environmental health, for children's services, etc. So a whole range. And they are accessible on the London Safeguarding Children Board website and are available for all agencies to reference and incorporate into their own practices if they so choose. But what we'll be saying is that the full guidance will be ready towards the end of September, and the new child protection guidance for London, but actually available nationally, will be available in December. So we hope that will provide some clear support mechanisms for the agencies. Some of the issues that we'd like to touch on as we enter into the discussion phase of this workshop, it's really around law enforcement, because sharing that intelligence with law enforcement agencies to build that picture and the profile around child trafficking and raise awareness is crucial, we've found. And police involvement in that process at the various stages, be it at the arrest stage, be it at the support stage through child abuse investigation teams, etc., we'd like to explore. So the advantages and disadvantages of law enforcement involvement in the process would be something we'd like to discuss. Also, the relationship between the immigration arrangements, so the asylum process for children, and children's social care statutory responsibilities, the Children's Act, etc. And whether, from your experiences, from your agency's experiences, you're finding any conflict between that process. And certainly from our experiences, there are some difficulties, but there are also some huge positive developments in this particular area with colleagues in UKBA and immigration, understanding and beginning to address safeguarding as an important, a critical element in their engagement with children. And we're working together with them to support that particular process and develop those systems and understanding. And I think this theme through the day has been consistent, safeguarding and multi-agency working and child protection. And that multi-agency arrangement at every level, strategic, policy, national, but also frontline, around that particular child within the context of a strategy meeting structure for those colleagues within children's services, I'm sure you'll understand what that means, makes a difference. And in our view, is the only mechanism by which children who may be and who are victims of child trafficking can be addressed. So I'm going to stop there. I can talk about this for a long time, but I'm very keen to generate some discussion. So I can now thankfully move away from the lectern.